Please enjoy A.M. Jenkins's acceptance speech for the Michael L. Prince 2008 Honor Book designation for her novel Repossessed, recorded live on June 30, 2008, at the Michael L. Prince Award Program held during the American Library Association's annual conference in Anaheim, California.
Can y'all hear me? Is it too loud? Not loud enough.
Perfect.
Shut up. Okay, the first thing I want to do is thank HarperCollins and especially my editor to whom this book is dedicated. I've been both lucky and privileged to work with Anne Hoppe. The great thing about Anne is that she not only loves her work and takes pride in it, she also has the editorial talent to back it up. The second thing I want to do is thank my agent, Stephen Malk. Steve and I have been together for many years, and over those years, his work has provided my family with a stable base through periods of stress and upheaval. In so doing, he's protected my kids at times when they've been most vulnerable, and that is a debt I can never hope to repay. The third thing I want to do is thank the Prince Committee. Repossessed just doesn't seem like the kind of book that would have a chance at an award like this. It can be a very quick read. You can zip through it just like that. It's also got some humor in it. And neither of these qualities seems to encourage awards consideration in any of the arts. On top of that, the book wasn't getting a lot of buzz beforehand. Sorry, Anne, but it's true. And it seems to me that the odds of 9 people coming to an agreement to honor an under-the-radar, funny, fast read are about the same as those as a bolt of lightning striking Walter Mays where he now sits. I have to admit, I almost feel as if I'm up here under false pretenses. Not because of the humorous quick read and buzz thing, but because the comment I hear most about Repossessed, the thing most people seem driven to talk about, is that it's a reminder to appreciate the details of everyday life. And when I first heard that, I thought, oh yeah, I guess that's true. As far as I recall, it's one of the things that sparked the story for me. I was thinking about Satan, as of course we all do when we're driving the kids to school, right? We mentally remind ourselves that sometime today we got to go by the grocery store to get some dog food. We sign last-minute permission slips with one arm in the back seat. We realize we forgot to take the clothes out of the dryer last night. And of course we wonder what we would do if we were angels once beloved of God who had been cast into the fiery pits of hell. Suppose you're a fallen angel. You used to be a nice guy once. You wouldn't have been one of God's right-hand beings in the first place if you weren't a nice guy. But you lost God's trust for whatever reason, and so you've been incarcerated in the foulest of all possible jails for thousands upon thousands of years. Now let's suppose that one day you're suddenly free. What's the first thing you do? I'm thinking the first thing I'm going to do when I get out of hell is I'm going to stretch, inhale a nice big breath of fresh, wonderful air, and take my own sweet time enjoying the feeling of not being locked up and miserable. I'm not going to turn right around and start picking on somebody else a la The Exorcist. The first thing I'm going to do when I get out of hell is appreciate not being in a fiery pit, thank you very much. To me, that was a given about the story before the very first word was even on paper. So, to me, as I was working, it wasn't what the story was truly about, but part of the wallpaper against which the real story was written. I'm not saying that if you see it differently, you're wrong. I'm saying that if you come up to talk to me about it and I give you a silent stare, I'm not being snotty. I'm casting blankly about for some kind of reply. So what's the book about to me? Well, when I write a book, I'm usually exploring at least one idea. There has to be something, some idea or question that compels me enough to hold me through years of writing and rewriting the dang thing. In Repossessed, the main idea that kept me engaged and motivated throughout the writing process was the idea of rejection. Every character in the book deals with it in one form or another. Now, this is the kind of occasion where I think I'm supposed to say something universally memorable, something fit to be published and passed on to others, but I figure since it's my award, I get to say what I please. And what pleases me is to say something to you, the people who are here in this room tonight. What I want to talk about is rejection in terms of one specific character in the book, Jason, Sean's little brother. Jason's thread is one you'll see in many of my books. In fact, I realized after Repossessed came out that it's a companion book of sorts to another I wrote called Out of Order. If you combine some of the characters in Repossessed, you might come up with someone very like Colt, the main character in Out of Order. Now, Jason is very different from Colt, but like Colt, he is someone that every librarian in this room has met on multiple occasions. He's the kid you never see until one of his teachers forces him to choose a book for a book report. He comes in under duress, often annoyed about having to waste his time being in a library at all. He quickly scans the shelves for the very thinnest book he can find that will meet his teacher's criteria, but that isn't embarrassing to be seen with. Although, he will only be seen with it during the time it takes him to get to his locker and toss it in the bottom, whence it may or may not ever return. Over the years, I've tutored kids in reading, both as a volunteer and in a paid capacity. Usually I've tutored first and second graders, so I've seen the Jasons and Colts when they're just getting started on their reading careers. And let me tell you, when you have to translate every letter to an individual sound, and then pull out the sounds together into a word that means something, and then all the words together into a sentence that makes sense, when you are busy doing all these things, it is very difficult to enjoy a story. Most kids get better at it with time and practice. A very few will never be lucky enough to catch on. Some will catch on, but they'll never catch up with that type A student over in the corner. But here's the thing, whether they catch up or not, these kids know from the very beginning of their school careers that they're not picking it up as quickly as most kids their age. What's more, everybody else knows they're not picking it up. The teacher knows it, their friends know it, every student in their grade knows it. From the time these kids were small, they have had a negative experience every single time they enter a building that has a lot of books in it. For the Jasons and Colts of this world, walking into a place with books, like a classroom or library, means walking into a place where everyone around you knows that you're not good enough. I was a huge reader when I was a kid, and I think the vast majority of you were probably the same way. To us, a room full of books was, and still is, an invitation to 1,000 exciting journeys. To Jason and to Colt, that same room is an invitation to 1,000 humiliating failures. To a kid like Jason or Colt, books represent falling short. They represent being stupid and slow when it feels like everyone around you is smart and fast. And this is where you who are librarians come in. You know this kid. You know Jason and you know Colt. He may be sullen. He may be shy. He may be surly just because you're the adult who happens to be in charge of the room he's in. He may be intentionally obnoxious. Maybe he writes on the library tables, or worse, carves into them with a ballpoint pen. Maybe he tries to look at naughty things on the internet. Maybe he shoots spit wads at people, then looks innocent. Maybe the least harmful thing he'll do in your library is sleep the entire class period, maybe. But the one thing he is not going to do in your library or out of is read a stinking book, not unless somebody threatens him with a slow and unpleasant demise. And a lot of the time, he won't even read it then. But bless you all, when you see this kid coming, you shove down the suspicion that this is the punk who stuck chewed up gum in one of the flash drive ports. You force yourself to pry your clenched teeth apart so that the kid will see what you hope passes for a pleasant expression. If you're very tenacious, and if you've had your morning coffee, you might even manage a smile. Because you know that you are probably the one thing that has a chance of ever making this kid not hate walking in the door of a room filled with books. And more than that, you have the calling. The reading is my soulmate calling, and because of it, you can't help yourself. You are driven to try, again and again, to plant a seed in what is obviously dry and bitter soil. From your end, I know it often looks like a fruitless effort, but the thing I want to tell you tonight is that it matters. Even the smallest and seemingly most useless gesture matters. I'm telling you as a tutor of the Jasons and Colts. I'm telling you as a writer who gets an occasional letter from a kid who never finished a book till he read mine. I'm telling you as the parent of a Jason or two myself. It matters. Your efforts are appreciated. And sometimes they do bear fruit down the line where you won't get to see. So the last thing I want to do tonight is just for a moment to set aside all the Prince Awards and honors, to set aside my supposed authorliness, and to speak on behalf of those who never asked me to speak for them, those who, being shy or surly or obnoxious, would not give me permission to speak for them even if I'd asked it. I speak for them anyway. On behalf of the Jasons and the Colts of the world, I say thank you.
This recording is brought to you by Brilliance Audio and the Young Adult Library Services Association, a division of the American Library Association. To listen to all of the 2008 Prince Award speeches, please visit YALSA's website, www.ala.org/YALSA.